This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Well, it is happening, people. Yesterday, the CDC announced that those who are fully vaccinated can feel comfortable taking off their masks indoors and outdoors, with a few exceptions. The federal agency recommends anyone who isn't vaccinated still continue to wear a mask to protect themselves and others. That put Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer in quite the position, having recently sent vaccination benchmarks for easing restrictions, including the mask mandate. But today the governor announced she will follow the CDC and end the mask mandate for vaccinated people in Michigan. Many of the details for what this might mean in terms of gatherings and workplaces are still forthcoming. But suffice to say, conditions are changing rapidly here in Michigan. With us to help unpack some of the news from Lansing this week is Adrian Hemond, a Democratic strategist with Grassroots Midwest, and John Selleck, a Republican strategist with Harbor Strategic Public Affairs. Adrian, John, welcome back.
Thanks so much.
Thanks. It's good to be back.
Sorry we're not actually in the studio yet, but now at least it feels like that's going to happen someday. Gentlemen, we've had Governor Whitmer loosening rules on workplaces, but then the CDC's announcement that vaccinated people will be safe without masks appears to have stoked the governor to lift the mask mandate for everyone who's vaccinated in Michigan. Adrian, do you think the CDC backed the governor into a corner on this?
Yeah, I think there's an element of that for sure. You know, one of the things that we're real bad at in this country in general is public health communication. And the timing of this does not seem like the governor had much of a heads up that this was coming.
Right. John Selleck, what do you think?
I would say that from what I've seen the governor doing over the last few weeks, that the governor is looking to get out of the restrictions business. And this doesn't back her into a corner. It helps her get out of the restrictions business. First, she said that she was going to allow offices to open. And now she's saying that she's going to follow the CDC, follow the science, as she said, and get rid of that mask mandate. She doesn't want to have to implement new restrictions. She doesn't even necessarily want to be responsible for lifting the old ones. And this allows her, frankly, a way out. And it's, guess what, based on science.
Do you have any sense of how the release of some workplace rules for the vaccinated, how that's been received?
I think overall it's been received pretty well. There are some folks who still have concerns, and there are still some folks who would like to be vaccinated who haven't had the opportunity to be fully vaccinated and get outside that 2-week period. But I think in general, people are looking forward to seeing other people. And I think that there are a lot of folks that are looking forward to getting back in the office and not working from home with no real work hours to speak of.
Yeah. John, what have you been hearing?
Yeah, I definitely hear that people are excited to see people. They're excited to get out again. And when you combine that with what is the normal exit from hibernation for Michiganders, right about this time, the sun is actually out today. People usually get that urge to be out and be about. So getting this news is exciting. I also don't blame a lot of people for feeling kind of confused or maybe potentially will be slower to react because we've kind of been in this whipsaw back and forth. Every few weeks, it feels like there's a crisis about to arise. And then you wait a second and they're like, oh, actually, we took a good step forward. So as with this entire last year and a half, I think it'll move forward and, you know, fits and starts. But we seem to be heading in the right direction. And, you know, that's probably a good thing for Governor Whitmer going into her reelection.
Yeah. I wanted to ask both of you, what's new in your workplaces? Is anybody, either of you, wearing hard pants yet?
I put most of those in storage, but I'm also about to sell my house. So that's related. You know, we at Grassroots Midwest, some folks have been coming into the office. To be honest, I didn't miss a day of work during the pandemic, but I also banned the rest of the employees from the office. They've been trickling in a little bit, where they feel comfortable, but we're not requiring anyone to be in the office 9 to 5. And we may never do that again.
John, you were telling me you actually, I think, attended a hearing in Lansing the other day. What was that like?
I did. You know, it was both exciting and nerve-wracking and sweat-inducing all at the same time. First time for me to enter back into a committee hearing. And, you know, I'm pleasantly surprised that everybody in the audience was being cautious, wearing a mask. The room is still separated. The chairs are moved about. But, you know, at the same time that there's anxiety leading up to it and you wonder how other people are going to act. boy, seeing those familiar faces and even hearing the familiar voices of Democrats I don't always agree with, it's kind of joyous. And you don't usually say that about heading to a legislative hearing.
I would be remiss if I didn't note that my home state governor, Mike DeWine of Ohio, announced a lottery drawing this week for those who have been vaccinated. Weekly winners for a total of 5 weeks will receive up to $1 million. Cheap and dirty, but will it work? Is this something that Gretchen Whitmer should be thinking about? Adrian, would it fly here?
Well, I love this idea, but I've also been called a degenerate gambler by people that I care about. So maybe that's playing into that. I do think, you know, incentives work, right? And a lot of people buy lottery tickets, on the off chance that they could win. Your odds are actually better with the vaccine lotto than they are with winning, the Powerball or the Mega Millions. It's not quite as much money, but $1 million is a lot of money. I like this idea.
John, I have some friends who are checking to see if they can quickly establish residency in Ohio. Are you among them?
That's really saying something. Between either Michigan State fans like myself and certainly all the Wolverine fans in the world, nobody wants to admit any desire to live or be connected to Ohio. I think, frankly, what we're seeing is, though, when the governor takes a step forward saying that offices might reopen, although not offering any details, that seems like an exciting thing. And then once again, the states around Michigan take 5 steps forward, and Governor DeWine's been far more aggressive. Not only did he offer this possible almost lottery-like winning, but he also set a date and said, I'm going to take all the restrictions off by June 2nd. But it matters in the business world because Michigan businesses have to compete with those businesses that are located in those other states. And right now, those other states are looking a lot more attractive, if not also a lot more fun.
If you're just joining us, we're wrapping up the week in politics today with Republican strategist John Selleck and a Democratic strategist, Adrian Hemond. Guys, election season is already with us. And this week, Detroit's police chief, James Craig, made 3 announcements. Number one, he's retiring. Number two, he is a Republican. And number three, he's not running for governor. Is he viable as a GOP candidate? John, what do you think?
The short story is, yes, he absolutely is viable. And there's a few reasons for that. One, Republicans are sitting here watching Governor Whitmer struggle. She's having a rough stretch pretty much no matter way you describe it. When even the sort of like uber progressive groups in Lansing are putting out polling showing her approval rating slipping under 50%, you know, her own polling is showing similar things. I think that's why we've seen her move to take some of these more aggressive reopening stances. And so those Republicans are excited to get a quarterback on the field. They feel frustrated, like, why aren't we in the game? Personally, I think strategically, it's benefited the Republicans to not have somebody in right now. The focus is on the governor and her decision-making, her inability to explain this flight to Florida and who paid for it when it seems like a simple thing to just rip the Band-Aid off and get it over with. That undercuts her credibility going forward. And then last, Republicans, but a lot of independents too, love the outsider, fresh new face, almost like political celebrities getting into these races. And that is something that James Craig is. He's a blunt spoken, transparent guy who's been on TV a whole bunch in Southeast Michigan over the last 8 years. He's frankly been on television a lot more than almost all the other elected officials in Southeast Michigan, other than maybe Mayor Duggan and Mark Hackle. So he's got a good toehold to get started. I think his campaign got leaked maybe in a way that he didn't plan on prior to his retirement. That wasn't the best thing. So now we'll sit and wait for a few weeks and see what the next step is.
John, I take your point that Gretchen Whitmer's approval rating may have slipped a bit, but at the same time, I saw results of a poll commissioned by MERS News reported this week, finding that Gretchen Whitmer still leads James Craig by 6 points before he'd even announced, and that she was also ahead of John James in voter preferences by a substantial margin as well. I mean, is she really that vulnerable?
Well, I know what Adrian will say, so I'm going to go ahead and counter the opposite with the opposite. this is a governor who's had the media platform to herself big time, almost daily television appearances across the state as the field general for Michigan that's leading the charge. And that has not resulted in re-election numbers over 50%. In fact, they're in the mid-40s when they straight up ask, are you going to vote to re-elect?
So, Adrian, I feel like we've been putting words in your mouth. What do you think of James Craig as a candidate?
You know, I'm pretty skeptical for a few reasons. The rollout here has been terrible. He's not even officially a candidate for governor yet. It's been, you know, leaked out in a variety of ways. His retirement press conference was terrible for his rollout. Mayor Duggan went ahead and endorsed Gretchen Whitmer at his retirement press conference, which is really not a strong look. He's clearly not being advised by anyone, or at least not anyone that seems to have his best interests at heart. You know, the other thing about James Craig is that there hasn't been a whole lot of scrutiny of his record. It's true he's been on television a fair amount in Southeast Michigan, but he has virtually no name ID outside Southeast Michigan. And there are some questions that need to be answered about the Detroit Police Department. You know, crime has been up pretty substantially under his tenure, even before COVID. Obviously, crime's up everywhere since the pandemic hit. He's going to have to answer some questions about that, about what was going on in his narcotics department. You know, he mentioned last week that he had to raid his own narcotics department. There are going to be questions asked about that. You know, and then there's the Trump issue, right? You know, so he, quote unquote, came out as a Republican at this press conference. But, you know, he still has questions to answer about the insurrection on the 6th of January and about the former president's allegations that, you know, an election crime was committed in the city of Detroit in November of last year. He's the chief law enforcement officer of the city of Detroit, and he's going to have to answer for that.
Guys, are we sure that James Craig is popular enough in Detroit that he would actually benefit Republicans? Or is this even aimed there? Is this aimed more at white suburbs like Oakland County that might be looking at James Craig's tough on crime statements and where, frankly, the GOP has lost some ground?
Yeah, I think that this is aimed outside the city of Detroit. I think John probably agrees with me about that. You know, a James Craig candidacy is predicated on this sort of, you know, Trumpian tough on crime message. I think that there are some holes there. You know, crime went up in Detroit under Chief Craig's tenure. So I'm not sure how well that messaging holds, but that's clearly the idea here, right? He's a pro-gun, tough on crime law enforcement official. And that's not meant to appeal to the majority of voters in the city of Detroit. It's meant to appeal to other voters.
Yeah, I would say a couple things there. First, when you talk about what it's aiming to do, I think we have to realize, from what I've seen, he wasn't recruited into the race. He wasn't told to get into the race. He chose to start talking about getting into the race. It's something he wants to pursue. So this candidacy, no matter where it ends up, is a product of what James Craig wants to do in serving the state of Michigan. And I think that's an honorable thing to have happen. Thank God we have people that do actually want to run for governor after taking on such a tough job as a police chief of a major city. Next, I think what would make Democrats a little bit nervous, even though Adrian will admit to it, is that he, in Southeast Michigan, he does appeal to a lot of voters in the suburbs. And there's two layers of people that he's really appealing to out there. There's first just the general viewing public who's hoping for the best all around in Southeast Michigan and in the city of Detroit. And they see James Craig as a very active, excellent communicator when it comes to crisis situations in Detroit. When there's an issue, he's there. He stands up in front, much like his Democrat mayor partner, Mike Duggan, unafraid to be up front and speak the truth. Then he added the second layer, which we all should have taken you know, much more quickly to be an important signal, that he went to Fox News and started appearing there over the last several months. And if you type James Craig in on YouTube, like I did recently, you'd be almost surprised how many times he's been on Fox News taking on the anti-police movement. And that certainly is a hot button inside the Republican base. So he's got both those layers of voters, whether they're all Republican or not, that are going to be his starting point.
What does the fractured state of the Republican Party mean for the gubernatorial primary, Adrian?
I sort of dispute the premise of that question. I don't think that the Republican Party is all that fractured. There are a few folks like the Liz Cheneys and Adam Kinzingers of the world who are off playing in their own sandbox. But the Republican Party is actually pretty unified right now, you know, around this sort of Trumpian nationalism, the tough on crime, the guns, etc. The Republican base is pretty unified right now.
At the same time, there were 100 prominent former office holders at the D.C. level who threatened this week that they will break off and start their own party if Donald Trump's influence is not purged from the party. John, what's the trickle down effect for that in Michigan's primary?
Adrian is correct as far as the elected officials in the Republican Party. They are either in natural lockstep with Donald Trump or they don't want to get whacked or hit by Donald Trump. So they're kind of staying silent and trying to ride the rapids. And that hasn't proven to be a good long-term strategy because the rapids never seem to calm down. The president took sort of a breather for a while, but he seems to be back in full force. And there's a lot of people ready to follow him. Despite what, you know, the valiant, brave efforts of Liz Cheney to go forward on what she's going to do. Polling that we saw in the Detroit News earlier this year, done by Richard Shuba, a Michigan pollster, show that the Republican Party does have a split in which you would identify yourself as a regular Republican or traditional Republican versus whether you're a Trump Republican. And those people are most definitely still there. And you can see it in some of the voting results that happened last year. For example, in Oakland County, people that were normally probably voted for Trump the first time couldn't bring themselves to do it the second time. So there is a split there. But so far, it doesn't have an ability to be very vocal without getting a social media beatdown.
Guys, for all the good news this week, the pandemic is not over. People are still getting sick in Michigan and people are still dying. But we have reached some milestones. And, you know, hey, more than half of our adult population has now received at least one vaccine dose. This question has been asked a couple times now, but it does feel like a significant moment. What do you see that's changed in Michigan today?
First, I see the predictably zigzagging back and forth feelings about what's happening and some of the tentacles of what is the solution to the pandemic, which is the vaccines. We seem to have gotten everybody that was going to be in a rush to get their vaccine has done it. And now we've hit a lull. And there's this question of incentives like we've talked about. That's important. We're seeing splits inside families where some people just are vaccine hesitant. And there's a temptation, I think, at times on the left, when I've seen my Democrat friends on social media, to forget we're not in Trump mode anymore. And when someone is vaccine hesitant, if your goal is to convince them to move forward and get the vaccine, despite some of their concerns about how fast it was produced or what the side effects might be, shaming them or attacking and staying in that old political mode isn't going to help us get there.
Adrian, do you think that anything fundamentally really has changed about politics in Michigan?
No, I don't think that the pandemic has fundamentally changed that much about politics in Michigan, because it's still the same people who still have essentially the same beliefs. I think one thing that has changed, and this predates the pandemic, but the pandemic has sort of brought it into sharper focus, is how hyper-political basically anything that we do in society has become now. And I think masks are a great example of that. They're going to continue to be a great example of that. You know, we run a bipartisan firm here, and I have heard from Democrats that, you know, well, I'm going to keep wearing a mask because I don't want people to think I'm a Republican. And I've heard the inverse from Republicans, like, I'm not going to wear a mask. People are going to think I'm a Democrat. I think that that's a really, really sad commentary on how we've let politics invade every part of our life. I say that as a political consultant. The pandemic's only brought that into even sharper focus, that we can't even talk about a public health measure without using it as a way to signal our political tribalism. It's actually very sad.
Adrian Hemond and John Selleck, thank you both so much for talking with us today. And here's hoping the next time it's over an adult beverage of everyone's choosing.
That sounds great.
Stateside from Streetside. I'm ready for it.